Hello, and welcome to the History of Haiti. Before we begin, sorry if the audio quality sounds a little weird. I'm not at my normal location. Jean-Pierre Boyer is the longest-serving president of Haiti in history. His rule spanned an impressive 25 years of relative peace, calm, and stability. He had united the country, ending a destructive civil war. He had achieved foreign relations, granted paying a hefty price. He had easily staved off attacks from almost every political faction. But in 1842, there finally came an attack, which Boyer could not survive. And in this episode, we will watch as a revolt finally overthrows Boyer. As I talked about last episode, in the elections of 1842 for the Haitian House of Representatives, the political, liberal opposition opposed to Boyer created a large campaign which got many opposition delegates elected. This campaign created hype in the nation around the opposition, reform, and revolution. But the opposition delegates in the House were plagued by the same divide which had hurt them in 1839. About 15 of the elected opposition delegates were the hardcore opposition, guys who were truly revolutionary and opposed to Boyer. Another 20-ish were a weaker opposition. These guys, while nominally backing the opposition, were willing to side with Boyer once push came to shove. This is about to become very important. In the weeks leading up to the official meeting of the House of Representatives, Boyer prepared for this potentially explosive confrontation. In the legislature of 1839, six of the delegates had been expelled from the House of Representatives, including the leader, Gerard Dumas. Four of these delegates were re-elected, and so Boyer asked the Senate to give him permission to ban them from the House of Representatives. When they did, he decreed them banned from the House of Representatives. He also arrested two editors of the main opposition newspaper and had them thrown in prison for criticizing the government. Both were delegates. He did the same thing with another delegate who went into exile to avoid prison. To persuade as many delegates as possible to stick with Boyer, Boyer's right-hand man, Injenac, began meeting privately with delegates. This seems to have worked particularly well. On April 2nd, with the House unable to meet due to delegates not having arrived yet, 15 of the 50-ish delegates met under the heavy influence of Injenac. These 15 claimed to compose the House of Representatives, though they met away from the actual building. They were soon joined by five more delegates, boosting their numbers to 20. These 20 Boyer-aligned delegates claimed to be the House of Representatives and declared the four opposition delegates expelled. On April 9th, the actual Haitian House of Representatives met without these 20 delegates. They chose to let in the four who had been expelled. The opposition controlled this house, and an opposition member was elected president. In response to this house meeting, Injenac and Boyer turned to force to crush the opposition. On August 12th at 6 a.m., the 20 delegates aligned with Injenac, along with a few others who had come over, entered the building that was used for the House of Representatives. They were accompanied by around 300 soldiers, ordered to prevent the opposition delegates from entering the house. At around 8, the rest of the House of Representatives arrived. These delegates talked the soldiers, who were sympathetic to them, into letting them into the house. Once inside, it appears that the realization that Boyer was willing to play hardball convinced another 10-ish opposition delegates to jump ship. This brought the number of guys aligned with Boyer and Injenac up to 36, more than enough to control the house. These 36 had the four delegates expelled, and then had another seven opposition delegates expelled. This brings the total excluded delegates up to 14, including the three that had been arrested. This coup changed the opposition. It convinced them that they could no longer rely on the democratic system to get into power. It showed them that Boyer was willing to use force against them, and they needed to respond with force. It turned this political, liberal, loyal opposition into a bunch of real revolutionaries. Real revolutionaries who could run a real revolution. This real revolution was about to gain steam from an unlikely source, Mother Nature. On Saturday, May 7th at 5 p.m., an earthquake hit Haiti. Shaking lasted for 6 minutes. It primarily hit the north. Cities like Gonaives, San Marc, and Port-au-Prince crumbled. Houses were split apart, stone buildings crumbled, and fires raged through cities in the ensuing chaos. The Great Sans Souci Palace was hit hard and was reduced to the state of ruin which it remains to this day. But the worst hit by far was Le Cap. In downtown Le Cap, half the population died. This was about 6,000 people. Then, the situation was exacerbated by people trying to take advantage of it. In these cities, looters began roaming the streets. In Le Cap, countrymen spying an opportunity descended like locusts, picking the city clean. They were brutal towards the civilians. These looters included members of the civil and military service. Soon, the army was called in to restore order in Le Cap and other cities. And it did, but only after days of rampant looting and chaos. Boyer's response to this earthquake seems to have been fairly good. He sent doctors and other aid workers north and provided tax breaks to all the citizens of the north. But he was criticized for not doing enough. He was also criticized because of the looting of Le Cap. This sack made Boyer look weak and unable to fulfill his responsibility to protect the Haitians. In addition, this earthquake spread anger which the opposition could harness against Boyer. Getting back to the opposition, they rebased themselves in the city of Lacai, the capital of the South Department, and they began planning their revolution. The disaffected representatives organized what they called the Society of the Rights of Man and of the Citizen, a name which was a callback to the old French Revolution. Many other new people joined the society, including its new leader, who I must now introduce, Charles Riviere Herard. The first thing you need to know about Charles Herard is that he is the cousin of Herard Dumas. And yes, it is confusing that there are two cousins named Herard, but Herard is not their last name, but I digress. I will refer to him solely as Herard. The second thing you need to know about Herard is that he was completely a military man. Born in 1789, the same year as the French Revolution, Herard spent his childhood inside a revolution. At a young age, he joined the military, fighting in the Revolution and Civil War. He quickly became an officer, eventually commanding an entire battalion. The selection of Herard shows that the opposition was planning a revolt and wanted a new leader, a leader with military experience who could win that revolt for them. The opposition was soon able to issue a manifesto declaring its hatred of Boyer. It gave their grievances against him and called for a new revolution. It was distributed and read in major cities, fueling resentment against the government. People were getting tired of Boyer's autocratic regime and wanted real democracy in Haiti. Opposition members traveled through the South, meeting with villagers and countrymen in banquets to get support. They promised people a better future once the opposition took control. In fact, many of these farmers would soon join the revolution. Boyer knew all about this, and he knew that Herard and Dumas were planning a revolution. But he wanted them to. Boyer figured that if instead of cracking down on these rebels, he let them revolt, a revolt he was convinced would be immediately crushed, they would expose themselves and could be punished. So he let this happen. He even allowed them to legally purchase arms and ammunition, guns he knew would be turned on him. The revolutionaries kept up their planning with the idea of launching the revolution in Lacai between January 21st and 27th. And as this date approached, it was pushed back to the 28th. the general in charge of Lakai, our old friend General Borghella, started talking about arresting these guys and cracking down on the potential revolt. These guys were told about this, and so the Society for the Rights of Man and of the Citizen fled Lakai for the nearby Proslin estate. There, they raised the metaphorical flag of revolt, fighting under the banner of their manifesto. The revolution had begun. Initially, support of the Patriots, as these rebels would be called, was widespread, but the actual Patriot revolt received few adherents. About 100 guys joined the revolt in Proslin, and that was it for now. There had been many revolts in the past decade, and almost every single one of them had been crushed. People were reluctant to go all in on this revolt and risk everything for it. But as we will see in a second, once it began to gain steam, everyone was on board. So Borghella amassed his soldiers in Lakai and decided to go out and attack these 100 patriots at Proslin. He amassed 400 soldiers and sent them marching, but changed his mind and brought them back to Lakai. Playing like an experienced Axis and Allies player, a reference I doubt any of you will understand, Borghella wanted an overwhelming force to crush this little rebellion. So he brought two regiments, bringing in a lot more soldiers. These regiments marched against Proslin, and so the rebels fled into the countryside, a concerning start. If it wasn't for what I am about to say, this could have been the end of the revolt. Sure, these guys might have been able to gain more support and reinforcements from other cities or the countryside, but that is unlikely. This revolt was looking like any other failed rebellion by any other failed Haitian revolutionary. But then of our events in the port city of Jeremy, on the other side of the peninsula, changed this revolt. In Jeremy, hatred of Boye and support of the opposition was far more widespread and deep than in Lakai. There was a society of opposition members ready for a revolt under the banner of the Lakai Manifesto. But, as in Lakai, the opposition revolt was triggered by the news that there was a plan from the authorities to arrest them. About 80 opposition members met at one of their houses. They soon had 200 soldiers, many of whom were defectors. These 200 soldiers seized control of Jeremy. They opened the arsenal, captured the commander, and got the other soldiers to surrender or defect. The soldiers in Boye's army had little actual loyalty to Boye, and neither did their officers. Most of them were more sympathetic to the revolutionaries than they were to Boye. The opposition was soon also helped by the defection of an important general based on the western edge of the peninsula. This general, General Lazare, was months behind on his paycheck and was angry at Boye over it. So the Patriots paid him the money Boye owed him, and he agreed to defect with his soldiers. Herard and his 100 guys reached Jeremy on the 5th, and they were welcomed as the leader of the revolt. The tables were then turned. Herard and his new army pursued the army that had chased them to Jeremy, with the commander refusing to fight because he feared defections. Even with his retreat, which was successful, several hundred of his soldiers defected to Herard. In Port-au-Prince, Boye did not exactly have the kind of good, charismatic leadership he needed to survive this crisis. He was no longer the man he used to be. He no longer really had the charisma, the military talent, and most of all, the unrelenting drive and energy he needed. Boye's attitude now turned cold and depressed, and he didn't like that this was coming to a civil war. He was now 67 and old and frail. He had previously considered retirement, but had been talked out of it, and the people who surrounded him were no better. Injinak, his right-hand man, was crippled and almost blind from age. This was the Boye who was trying to fight the revolution, but he could still put up a fight. So in mid-February, he ordered several thousand soldiers to go from the north to go south and attack Jeremy. These northern soldiers were divided into two columns. To fight these two columns, Herard sent a young and energetic named Fabre Geffard, who I will surely be talking much more about. He sent Geffard with just 150 men, while he maneuvered his main army around it. Geffard was able to use drums to make it look as though he had way more soldiers than he actually did, and he was able to encamp in a place where it looked like he was partially surrounding one of the columns. Then, against all conventional wisdom, he started giving out food to the enemy soldiers, who were malnourished, to inspire defections. Throughout the brief war, the loyalists and patriot soldiers viewed each other as brothers, not enemies, causing many defections from the loyalists to the patriots. Geffard was even able to ride into the loyalist camp with about a dozen horsemen to convince soldiers to defect. He escaped without being caught. Anyway, Herard and his main army began to approach this column, and the general, fearing encirclement, ordered a retreat to Lacai. Seeing this, the other column also quit its advance on Jeremy. But another force made up of soldiers from the city of Laogon was also ordered to march on Jeremy. They arrived at a small improvised fort occupied by the patriots, which they stormed. Their commander was wounded, however, and soon died from his wounds. His army took the fort, but they chose to fall back a little ways in confusion. Then the patriots, spying an opportunity, entered the camp, like Geffard had done, and managed to convince the Laogonese soldiers to defect. This was a great victory for them. Finally, most of what remained of the loyalist forces in the Lacai area were gathered together and sent to march to Jeremy, for real this time. 2,500 loyalist soldiers marched first to the western edge of the peninsula, and then up the western edge towards Jeremy. En route, they captured many small towns, but faced some resistance. Finally, the loyalist army met the army of General Lazar. Remember, he's the general who was bribed to defect. On February 25th, on the plains near Jeremy. Initially, the loyalists attacked and managed to push the patriots into an almost rout, but the patriot army rallied and reattacked. Then patriot soldiers attacked the loyalist flank, causing them to flee in a confused rout. This battle was the deadliest of the short war, leaving 200 dead on both sides. It was a big victory for the patriots. Not only had they turned back the loyalist army, but about 600 loyalists had defected after the battle. With the success, it was the patriots' turn for a campaign. While Lazar stayed in Jeremy, Herard and his army marched east across the northern coast of the southern peninsula. As they marched, they captured cities, supplies, arms, and ammunition. The soldiers who stood in their way simply defected. Soon, he reached the town of Miragon, just 50 miles from Port-au-Prince and northeast of Lacai. Other cities like Pied-Cove and Laogon soon revolted to join the revolution. A government army was sent to recapture Laogon, but most soldiers defected and others retreated. Now, Herard planned to recapture the city where all of this had started, Lacai. In early March, with Herard coming from one direction and Lazar on the other, the two armies marched on Lacai. A total of 3,000 soldiers soon surrounded the city of Lacai, but Borghella was ready for a siege. His soldiers, however, were not willing to have it come to that, and they all defected to the revolution. Lacai was stormed, and on March 9th, it was finally captured. So now the entire southern peninsula was in a state of revolt against the government, a revolt which it did not look like Boyer was going to win. Boyer decided that instead of fighting tooth and nail, instead of making this into real civil war, he was just done with it. Setting the precedent for future Haitian leaders, Boyer decided to leave Haiti and go into exile before it got bad. What may have pushed him over the edge is when he went through the streets of Port-au-Prince and was heckled by a group of women. He secured passage out of the country with the British consul. On March 13th, he sent his abdication to the Senate and published it. It's pretty short, so I'll quote it in full here. 25 years have passed since I was called to replace the illustrious founder of the Republic, whom death has just taken away from his country. During this period of time, memorable events have taken place. In all circumstances, I've always endeavored to fulfill the wishes of the immortal Pétion, whom I was in a position to know better than anyone. So I was quite happy to see successively disappear from the ground civil war and the divisions of territory which made the Haitian people a nation without strength, without unity. I was then able to see its national sovereignty officially recognized, guaranteed by treaties whose execution was prescribed by public faith. The efforts of my administration have constantly tended towards a system of wise economy of public funds. At this moment, the situation of the national treasury offers the proof of my constant solicitude. About 1 million pastries are placed in reserve there. Other funds are, in addition, deposited at the Casse des Despots at Consignonots in Paris on behalf of the Republic. Recent events, which I must not describe here, have brought disappointments for me, which I should not have expected. I believe that it is my dignity, as well as my duty towards the fatherland, to give in this circumstance a proof of my entire personal abnegation by solemnly abdicating the power with which I have been invested to the maintenance of order, by also condoning myself to voluntary ostracism. I want to remove any chance for civil war, any pretext for malevolence. I only form one wish, that Haiti be as happy as my heart always wanted. Then, that same day, at 7:15 p.m., he got on a rowboat that would take him to a British ship. As he sat on that rowboat, Boyer gave a final prophecy. Speaking of the revolutionaries, he told historian Beobrun Ardouin, who was accompanying him on that boat, "I do not give them a year. They will be devoured by the infamous passions which they have aroused in the people."